Welcome into another edition of the Dana Victory Podcast, only on MusketeerReport.com. As always, I'm Rick, he's Dan, and this is the 29th edition of the Dana Victory Podcast. It's been a little while, but Dan, what do you got for us?
Well, my first instinct, as always, is to go to the 1990 Reds. Number 29 on that team, Rick, an immortal. The immortal Herm Winningham. But for this particular podcast, we're going to name this one in honor of our special guest tonight, Rick, because it's his age. Why don't you tell the people who we've got on the podcast tonight?
Yeah, big show planned tonight. We're going to talk plenty of recruiting, but we've also got a special guest on the Dana and Victory podcast tonight. One assistant coach, Travis Steele, is going to join us, and I think there's going to be a ton of interesting stuff to talk with him about. Dan, we've been waiting sort of to get – we've been upping our, you know, our guests. We started out with one Brian Snow. Not bad. Well, let's face it. It's pretty embarrassing. But
Snow's a stepping stone guest.
Right, a stepping stone guest.
Coming podcast.
Right, exactly right. He's like the Akron – or the Moorhead State of podcast guests. And then we moved on up. You know, we've got Mario Mercurio on. We've had Byron Larkin on. We've had Andy Mack on. Pretty good guests. But it's exciting to get a coach on and sort of get an inside look at the program.
Yeah, I think we're going kind of establishment, which our fans may not like. It's kind of like when that indie rock band signs with a major label. But it is going to be really cool. This obviously is the first time we've had a member of the coaching staff on the podcast. Now, obvious ground rule that we'll throw out now so no one has any unrealistic expectations of this conversation. Obviously, Travis is not allowed under NCAA rules to talk about specific unsigned recruits. We think he'll be able to comment on Kamal Richards, on Brandon Randolph, on the other players that X has on the roster, obviously. But, yeah, as far as unsigned guys or guys X is recruiting, we won't be able to get him to weigh in on that. But Rick and I will discuss Xavier's remaining 2013 targets, some guys from the 14 and 15 class, and also some transfer names that have popped up over the last month or so between the two of us after we're done interviewing Travis.
Yeah, and that's a good place to start, actually. Let's start right there with recruiting and this 2013 class. Dan, of course, the first person that everyone's going to ask about is Junior Itu. You know, he's been on the radar for a long time, and there's been a lot of buzz about him from basically the middle of the basketball season on. And nothing new has really happened here, and there's still no new news to report. Basically, the situation is it's not sure if he's going to qualify because there's still transcript issues from all his transfers and coming from overseas, and there's a whole age issue thing with him, which ultimately really doesn't matter. I don't think anyone's going to care how old he is as long as he's a good player. That only mattered to the high school kids that he was beating up on all basketball season. But as for Xavier, everyone's like, well, why wouldn't they just take a commitment now? Because they're probably not going to know whether he's eligible until the fall, like has happened with recruits in the past. That may be true. One, they'd like to get a better idea of whether or not he's going to be eligible, if that's possible. And even if not, there's no reason to push for a commitment right now because they're still looking at some other 2013 options. They might be able to fill that scholarship with somebody who is ready to help right away, and there's no reason to take a guy who may or may not qualify.
Well, there was an article that mentioned Junior about the Capitol Classic in the Washington Post yesterday, and I'll read the blurb. O'Connell Senior Junior Itu told me his list of schools is down to Rutgers, Washington, and Xavier. The forward, who enjoyed his recent visit to Washington, said he's not sure when he'll decide on a college. Now, that is interesting because I believe the last time we talked about this was Snow. Itu was getting ready to visit Miami, and that was sort of the big at least from the outside, one of the big competitors for Xavier. So Xavier is on the last three for Junior Itu. As far as age goes, you know, obviously, it's presented a problem for him as far as the rules go in D.C. high school ball. But no one's heart ever bleeds for those poor kids from Weber State that get beat up by the 29-year-olds at BYU who are back from their Mormon missions. So
right.
I I honestly, that ought to be the least of your concerns if you're a Xavier fan. The big concern is whether Junior's all of his credits are going to transfer and whether he's going to be able to qualify, because X has had some rough luck with the NCAA over the last few years, and I think the coaching staff probably under a little bit of pressure to make sure their incoming players are able to meet the academic demands of Xavier University. So it would be a surprise to me if X was to take a kid that they really that really was this far up in the air as far as his qualification goes. But moving from E2, Rick, another guy that's come back on the radar, a guy that was sort of loosely connected with Xavier during his recruitment but is now back on the market, is Alaric Freeman, who decommitted from UCLA this week, 6'3 guard slash forward from Charlotte, North Carolina, played at Finley in Las Vegas. And the interesting thing about Freeman is he's a guy that can fill in at the 1-2 and the 3. Can you give us a little bit of a take on his game and where his recruitment might be now that he's decommitted from the Bruins?
Yeah, well, with Ben Howland getting fired, he was let out of his letter of intent. So he is a guy who's basically just like a 2013 recruit at this point. I mean, he is going to be able to play next year. For one, let me start with where his recruitment's at right now. Excuse me. Minnesota, Baylor, and Georgia Tech are all involved, as are Xavier. And we're expecting this to be a fairly short process. Snow has a pretty good source on this, knows someone that's pretty close to Freeman. And basically the message he got was he could commit really after any of these visits. Like, he's looking for the school that he wants to go to and get this over with as soon as possible. The good news is that Xavier is realistically in the mix, and they are likely to get a visit as long as he like doesn't commit to Minnesota right now this week, as he's visiting today, I believe, as we're recording this on Tuesday night. So it's going to things are going to move quickly here, and Xavier might be out of this before they ever even get an opportunity to really sell themselves on a visit. But as far as his game, if they are able to attract Freeman, it'd be a huge get, because he's a very big physical guard, but he's also very skilled. And the reason he can play the one is he's not maybe the quickest laterally, but he's a good athlete. He's fast for the most part, just not super quick in space. And he passes the ball really well, handles it well. He knows how to play. He can run a team. And he also shoots the ball well from the outside. He can score from all three levels and is good at using his frame. He's definitely a guy that would be a great addition, as Snow talked about on the message board, because you'd throw him in there with Samaje, let him handle the ball and make plays with the ball in his hands in the ball screen motion offense, sort of as Tua and Mark Lyons did on this team just a couple years ago. And then you have a legit shooter in Miles Davis. And really, D. Davis, end of the day, people complained about his shooting, but he actually shot the ball pretty well this past year, and they only expect him to improve. You have a couple other guards who can shoot the ball, so I think he'd be a great addition, and give him a guy who can play the three and give him more depth there. I mean, it would really put some heat on Justin Martin at that three position without question.
One, I think that's the position that most fans looking at the team going into next year are saying, that's where we need depth. That's where we need more options, because Martin has been frustrating in his 2 years of play. Last year he was up and down. You know, a little bit of that probably attributable to the concussion he suffered in the Vanderbilt game. But, X is going to need consistent production from the three, and that was something that they just never got last year, at least after the 1st of December. Alaric Freeman, another interesting thing, because this is something that we had talked about, I think last winter, was it's tough to really get a read on where the 2013 recruiting class is going to be, because not only are there guys like Itu who are still sort of in the wind and we're waiting on, but there's also guys that are going to come available as the coaching carousel turns. And certainly Ben Howland losing that job at UCLA was the biggest surprise, or and maybe not a surprise, but the biggest mover and shaker in that bunch. Now, there's one other 2013 guy that we have heard absolutely nothing about recently, and that's Alexander Vezenkov. Rick, anything to report on that young man?
Yeah, nothing really on Vezenkov, though. I do think they are still in the mix there. I don't know what the situation is. I don't know how frequent the line of communication is between the two parties, and I don't know that Vezenkov is really too worried about making a decision just yet. You know, he's still deciding between playing professionally or even coming over to play college basketball. If he does come over to play college basketball, as we talked about in the past, Xavier does have a good chance at getting him. Dan, there is one more guy, though, that we have not discussed at all that I wanted to bring up, and kind of a guy that I knew a little bit about him and seen him play once this high school season because he was in the state of Kentucky and at this new prep school called 22 Foot Academy. And he played just about a month ago in the Ohio versus Kentucky All-Star game, which I called, I did play-by-play for on TBNK TV. And he really impressed me in that game. I was kind of surprised. And then just this past weekend in Akron, he played really well. And Coach Steele, I know, was there to see him there. And I think Xavier's going to start looking at him a little bit at least and sort of see what the situation with him is. UCLA is one of the other schools recruiting him currently. So there are some other big schools in there. But people kind of, for one, already had their 2013 class figured out before they knew about the kid. And two, there's major concerns about his transcript as well because he attended United Faith Christian Academy, which has been one of those schools that is flagged, much like, happened to Miles Davis. He had his prep school flagged, and so all those classes he took didn't count. The same thing happened at United Faith Christian Academy, where McIntosh attended a year ago when he first made it over from Canada. Now, the interesting thing about that situation is Kaza Keen, who also came over from Canada and attended UFCA with McIntosh, was cleared to play at Illinois State this past year as a freshman after United Faith Christian Academy had already been flagged. They were able to appeal it, and he was cleared. He played. He started in 12 games this year, played a lot of minutes. So McIntosh.
This is Mikhail McIntosh, right?
Mikhail McIntosh is the recruit I'm talking about. Kaza Keen is the guy who attended United Faith Christian Academy with McIntosh and was eligible to play this year at Illinois State. So there is reason to be optimistic. McIntosh already has the right grade on his SAT, and he does have all the required core credits. So if his transcript is okay, he's going to be eligible if they can get those courses from UFCA cleared. And now listen to this with McIntosh as far as what he would bring to the table. He's a big combo forward, and I say that in sincerity because he's not a guy who's just too small to really be a four and not really good enough to be a three, so we call him a combo like often happens. He's a big guy who could legitimately play the four at 6'7", but much, much bulkier than a guy like Travis Taylor and still very athletic. But he's also got legit handle. I mean, he was bringing the ball up, running the point this weekend in the final four of that tournament, the Adidas Hoops Challenge up in Akron. And, I mean, he was very impressive. He's also got a competitive drive. That's one thing I've been really impressed when watching him play, both at the All-Star game, which, as we know, usually turns into a dunk fest exhibition. He was taking it seriously. He was getting after it on defense. He was taking guys to the rim and really trying to win that game. And it was just a competitive game in general. And he was one of the reasons why. He kind of set the tone with his play. And then again this weekend, I mean, his team was down by 14, and he brought him back, basically carrying them late in the second half, just attacking the rim, getting and ones, and continuing to play with a high motor throughout the entire weekend, despite playing a ton of minutes. So he's definitely a guy who's going to be interesting. It's just the very beginning stages here as far as Xavier's recruitment of him goes, but it is a guy that we've sort of uncovered just within the last week or two to keep an eye on for sure.
Well, and that's four guys that we've mentioned that would be, if they did sign and they were eligible, they'd be freshmen next year and ready to play: E2, McIntosh, Freeman, and Vezenkov. Another place that the Musketeers are undoubtedly going to be active is on the transfer market, because X does have two open scholarships for next year. And I don't know that we've really talked too much about specific names to the extent that they're out there at all, but do you get a read on whether the Musketeers have been active in this market? And if so, do you get the idea that they're going after guys that would have to sit out a year, or somebody like an Andre Walker who would be able to immediately play?
Well, as I said in the last Musketeer report, I think they're looking at one of each, ideally. One, a guy who would be a fifth-year transfer that'd be eligible to help them immediately, and then another guy who would give them you know, maybe like a sophomore transfer who's going to have 2 years left, but already has some experience at a high level and would be able to give them a little more experience and toughness moving into the Big East. Just that veteran leadership. You know, they're going to be relying on a lot of young guys over the next two seasons. And although they have some talent in the pipeline, you're still relying on young guys while making the move to the Big East. It'd be nice to have a little more physically mature guys on the roster that could sort of help lead you, maybe, if nothing else, and set a good tone in practice. So I think they're looking at one of each, but if the right guy comes in either form, they're going to take it. I mean, if it's two transfers that aren't eligible to help right away, that are just too good to pass up, they'll take that. If it's the other way around, they get two guys that can help them immediately, they're likely to do that as well. I will say they're very active in the transfer market right now, and as we mentioned on the message board, they did have a transfer this weekend. Not a ton of specifics I can really get into. It's a graduate transfer that will be available right away. I don't know anything about how good this specific player is personally. Never seen him play. Know nothing about his game, really. But let me just leave it at this. I think a lot of people are expecting them to look for help on the wing, and they're definitely doing that. They'll definitely be pursuing those type of guys. But let me just say that they very well may be looking to add depth inside as well. And that's really all I have. I do expect them to have at least one more fifth-year type transfer coming in for a visit soon. I don't have specifics on him either. Hopefully we can get into more of that as it unravels. But a lot of moving parts here, and for understandable reasons, the staffs are very tight-lipped about these types of things.
Right, and the reason for that is not only that you're talking about kids who are already, you know, it's sort of the same. It's sort of the same equivalent of if you've got a job and you start looking at other jobs and you go interview for that job, you may not want it getting back to your present employer that you're actively looking for another job. So that's one aspect of this. And then from the coach's perspective, I mean, it may be a situation where a lot of schools don't know that a specific target may be looking. And, you know, for a Xavier coach, if they've got a line on a kid that they think can help, man, you want to get him locked up before, say, a school that might be, you know, that might, let's say, an Ohio State or something like that might get interested. So
yeah, exactly. And you got to keep in mind, like, yeah, Jeff Goodman puts together a list online that looks like it has a million transfers on it. But end of the day, not everybody handles this process the same. There are guys, especially some more under the radar guys or guys at smaller schools, that don't necessarily announce to the world that they're transferring and open the recruitment up. They have a couple schools in mind that they sort of contact, let them know, hey, I'm transferring. And the schools that want to recruit them get their release, and you go from there. So I'm not saying any of that's happening in these specific cases. I don't know all the specifics of them, but keep that in mind when realizing why things are kind of tight-lipped on these situations, because there are some guys that not everybody knows is transferring yet, even though they already have a release and can be recruited or even on a visit possibly.
Well, we talk about these guys that could be eligible next year, but this summer really is critical for X in getting their 2014 class put together. Melvin Swift, a verbal commitment already in the books. He's a guy that obviously the staff has high hopes for. He's an Ashley Howard target coming from Texas. But this is a big class for the Musketeers, and there are a couple guys really heating up right now that you mentioned in your All for One report, and then also with your visits from Pittsburgh and Akron. Can you give us a little idea of who are the guys that we might want to keep an eye on as potential commits as the summer goes through and into the early fall?
Yeah, Dan. Well, I think when you first start talking about the 2014 class, you've got to start with Justin Bibbs. Originally from Dayton, went to Chaminade Julien, Derek Brown's former school. Then just transferred this past year down to Montverde Academy in Florida. And that he didn't play a lot on that team, which has kind of actually helped Xavier. It was really, really good, though. I mean, they had Casey Hill, who's one of the top point guards, and they had D'Angelo Russell, who's a five-star at the two. And, you know, he just didn't get a whole lot of playing time as a result of it. But he got a lot better playing against those guys every day. And the other thing is he got a lot stronger, too. His body looks great. And he's been excellent. I've gotten to watch him in both the past two evaluation weekends at Pitt and then again at Akron this past weekend. Played very well in both. And, you know, Coach Steele, we're going to talk to him a little bit coming up. And I think you'll hear from him that one of the important things for this coaching staff is finding guys that know how to play, not just guys that are super athletic or whatever, but guys that really know what they're doing on the court. And Justin Bibbs is one of those guys. He makes his teammates better. He's a good teammate. He works hard. And when he's on the court, he knows how to play. He understands offense. He understands defense. He plays help side defense. He passes the ball well. He shoots it well. He can handle it. And he can give them depth at both the 2 and the 3 because he is about 6'5 and pretty athletic. So Justin Bibbs is kind of the top guy right now, and they're all over him. I mean, they were at every one of his games during this evaluation period, which was really impressive. No other school did that. They visited him multiple times down at Montverde, and they also had an in-home visit when they were just allowed a few weeks ago. So they have been all over him, and they are definitely, you know, he told me they are one of the schools that have really turned up the heat probably more than anyone else. And he's happy about the fact that they have moved to the Big East. And he also went on to mention when I interviewed him at Pitt that his mom is a big fan of Coach Mack. So take that for what it's worth, but I think they are in a very good position with him right now.
You know, the answer to this question is always, it depends, but do you anticipate that Bibbs will make a decision before the end of the summer?
I do, actually. I kind of feel like, I mean, it's possible that it does, and I think, you know, he and his mother would probably rather him do that. I think they're kind of ready. They feel like they're far enough along in the process to start narrowing it down and decide where they want to go. I think his dad is kind of keeping him, trying to keep him a little more open-minded and try to, not necessarily enjoying the attention, but wanting to keep all the options open and seeing who else comes and looks and offers. But I definitely think that Xavier is winning this race right now with, you know, Dayton was there watching him, but they haven't even recruited him quite as hard. UC sent one assistant for his last game in Akron. And they've said that, you know, they've been recruiting him, but like they haven't shown him near the interest that Xavier has. So I don't, you know, I think Xavier is clearly the favorite right now, but this could, you know, his dad doesn't want him to commit yet, I don't think. And I think this could still play out for a little while, but if you put a gun to my head, my guess would be, yeah, he commits before the end of the summer.
Well, the one guy probably, excuse me, of all the guys that we've talked about for the 2014 class, it interests me the most is Edmund Sumner, just because it's probably a fait accompli at this point that Samaje Christen is going to head to the NBA after this season. So X is going to be in need of a point guard, and he's a real interesting prospect from the videos that you've shot and some of the scouting reports that you've shared.
Yeah, I mean, he played great at Boo Williams this past weekend, and his recruitment's really starting to blow up, sort of like we predicted last year. And, you know, at the time, I said he looks like a middle schooler. Well, now he's about 6'3", so he doesn't really look like a middle schooler, although he's still very thin and needs to add a lot of weight on. But, I mean, at 6'3", you know, he's a combo guard with good athleticism that can really score the basketball. He shoots it really well from beyond the arc, as he showed this past weekend. Scored 34 and hit 5 threes with Coach Mack watching him one game. The problem for Xavier is all these other schools are at these Nike EYBL events watching him as well. He plays for one of the most well-known AAU programs, The Family, out of Detroit. And, I mean, his recruitment's definitely blowing up. It's going to be tough. If Michigan and Michigan State are all over him, it's going to be tough to land him. But right now, you know, Xavier was the first school to ever recruit him at all. Coach Steele has developed a good relationship with his father. He's a guy that can it's going to be really interesting to see how his recruitment goes over the next 2 months. Because if it doesn't blow up real quickly, I think he's another guy that Xavier might have a chance at during the summer. But with the way he's playing, I could very easily see this one carry into the high school season, because there could very well be some new high majors coming and offering.
Well, and I think one thing that probably people need to keep in mind is that just because Xavier has joined the Big East doesn't mean that there aren't teams that are still higher on the totem pole from them. And especially for a kid like Sumner, who's from Detroit, right?
Exactly, yep.
You know, Michigan and Michigan State are obviously going to be you know, are going to loom large. And for a kid from Indianapolis, Indiana, Purdue, Notre Dame, schools like that are going to be in the mix. For kids from North Carolina, there's going to be Duke, UNC, et cetera. So, I mean, one of the things that I think that hopefully Coach Steele will comment on when we interview him is that even though the Big East does raise Xavier's level, they still are in a position where they're competing with teams that make the Final Four on a year-to-year basis. And it may be it shouldn't be viewed as Xavier fans, well, this conference affiliation means now we're going to get all those five-star guys. You know, everywhere you are in college basketball, there's somebody higher than you and lower than you. And I think we're going to see that going forward. But a guy like you've mentioned in the past, like a Devontae Smith-Rivera or a Jaquan Lyle or a kid that really is super concerned with conference affiliation, that's no longer going to be a roadblock for the Xavier staff when they go out recruiting.
Yeah, well, and just look at Jaquan Lyle. I mean, Coach Steele has known him forever, had a great relationship with him. Xavier makes the move to the Big East, and we think, oh, you know, they've got a chance again because they sort of pick up communication, and he says he's talking to Xavier again, and then he makes his final list, and they don't make the cut even still because he's an elite guy. I mean, he's a five-star type player, and he's going to go at the highest level, and that's just the way it is. It's always going to be that way. And there's a couple other guys, you know, guys that we just put on the hot board, Jared Terrell and Abdul Malik Abu, both playing for Expressions Elite. Coach Howard recruiting those guys had Xavier in there, and they're definitely on the mix. I had them on the hot board, but those guys just received offers. Terrell received offers from Kansas and Florida after his play this weekend at Boo Williams, and Malik Abu received offers from NC State, Texas, and Kansas. So, I mean, you know, they're recruiting some kids in that top 50 range, and even a little higher than that, that are going to get high major looks and blow up because they're playing really well. So we'll continue to adjust, you know, the hot board after the summer recruiting period and sort of see where things stand then. But it's like you said, it doesn't mean that they're going to land every kid and they're all of a sudden going to compete for five stars regularly. But it does put them in a situation where, hey, that's one less thing that can be used against them.
Rick, talking about the 2014 class, how big of a class do you anticipate? And are there particular positions where X may look to focus in?
Well, you know, we don't know exactly yet how big the class is going to be or necessarily what positions they're definitely going to need because we're not quite sure what's going to happen here in 2013. But I do know regardless of what happens in the transfer or the, you know, high school recruit, they are going to look for help on the wing, as we've discussed at length. And that's why Justin Bibbs is so important. You know, they really want to get – I think, to be honest, right now in 2014, they're recruiting one of everything. I think they're going to recruit a wing that can score the ball. I think they're going to recruit a center. And really, Sean O'Mara is kind of that guy right now. I mean, he's their top target there. He's been very, very good. And may start to blow up a little bit too, so you kind of got to watch that one. They're battling hard right now, trying to push for a commit from him. He's a space eater. He's a big, physical, tough kid that knows how to play, and that's one of the keys right now. They're looking for guys with high basketball IQs that can help them offensively. They didn't feel like they had guys who were great offensive players this year. They felt like it was a struggle. And every possession, you got to get to the rim and get a close shot and really work for a good look. Whereas if you're a little more skilled offensively, you can play a little more wide open, play a little more skilled, and everybody can kind of help on that end. So I think that's going to be one of the keys. But like I mentioned, I think they're going to want a wing, a big, and I think they're going to look at, you know, guys like Edmund Sumner, combo guards, Jaquan Newton, another guy, still very much a target. He's not really narrowing anything down right now, but he said that Xavier's one of the school putting the most pressure on him currently. He's shot the ball really, really well for the first couple weekends, and he's also, I mean, he's always been tough to keep out of the lane. So this is a guy that would be a huge get, again, at the combo position. I'd say he's sort of right there with Edmund Sumner as one of their top targets at that guard spot.
So it's sort of the Pete Gillen idea. They're sort of, it's a Noah's Ark class. They're looking for one or two of everybody.
Yeah, exactly. And you just see, and you know, because you probably want two wings here, no matter how it works out. But they very well may add a transfer who is has to sit out a year on the wing, and then will be available in 2014. And then you only need one wing in the class or something like that. So that's why they're still moving parts. So right now you kind of just recruit everything because they could add any of it depending on how the rest of this class plays out.
Well, one thing we do know as we look forward to the 2015 class is that X is definitely going to need a big man. And there's a local kid that X has been focusing in on, also a local point guard that X has been focusing on. Can you give us an update on those guys?
Yeah. In the 2015 class, James Bolden was one of the guys who really emerged during the high school season. And you know, Coach Mack offered him after the regional tournament, watching him at NKU's Bank of Kentucky Center, where he played really, really well in helping lead Holmes down to the state tournament. He's really struggled, and he's playing up at the 17U level in the Nike EYBL. It's been a huge adjustment, and I knew it would be because, for one, he's never seen that type of competition playing in Northern Kentucky. Two, he's very small still, and this is why he's not really quite at that level yet of being, you know, a top recruit or a high major recruit, because he's still only 5'10", 5'11", really thin, and can't defend much at the moment. He's fouling a lot, which has taken him out of the game. They've had him to move him off the ball at times because he's turning it over too much with the pressure being applied. I expected this. I'm not too worried about it. But he definitely still needs some work, and he's going to be a guy that, you know, we'll see how much his recruitment heats up. But Xavier did a good job of offering him early and getting in on early to where they're going to stick with him through this and see where it ends up. And, you know, maybe things will cool off next fall and winter as we get into the next season. But it's not something to worry about too much, but we'll definitely continue to watch his development. Another guy, a local guy, that really impressed me this weekend, and I've never been very high on him, but he looked a little bit different this weekend when I saw him play, and that's Nate Fowler, the big man at, yes, Moeller. It's a GCL kid. I know. I'm usually against this type of thing, but he played very limited minutes this weekend because I'm not really sure why, but their coach felt like he couldn't stay on the court with the other team playing a small lineup, despite the fact that, you know, when he was in there, that was the one advantage they actually had, was getting him the ball and letting him score. He's moving much better. He's running the court really well. When I saw him in the high school season, I felt like he was a little slow-footed. Didn't really look that way. He was playing with a high motor. He's very big. He's got legitimate size at 6'8", maybe even 6'9", and a huge body. I'm kind of happy with what I saw from him because he's trimmed his body already. He's moving better, as I mentioned. That's a good sign for a young big man, that he's putting in the work to do the right things off the court in the offseason to prepare himself. I think he's got a chance to be pretty good, and Xavier's definitely going to turn up the heat a little bit and keep a close eye on him.
All right. Any other guys in that class that you particularly want to talk about, or is it still too early to say?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of guys, you know, that you're going to see them probably offer here coming up. But they're getting out to see a lot of young guys. There's some good talent in the Midwest. Really, in the 2016 class, Ohio's going to be very good. But there's a guy or two in the 2015 class, like we've talked about in the past, A.J. Harris, guard from Dayton Dunbar. He's struggling a little bit, too. Like Bolden, he's very short. And he's just turning the ball over a little bit too much. The one thing I worry about with him is people like him because he's very explosive, and they feel like that helps him make up for his size. The one thing I've seen is I think he struggles a little bit in the half court to create offense. I don't think he's very good off of ball screens yet, and I don't think, you know, he uses that explosiveness to really create offense in the half court when the game slowed down. I think he's great in transition and really impressive at making plays. But when it comes down to a slowed-down half-court offense like we see constantly at the college level now, I just don't know that he really understands how to create offense for himself or his teammates yet. That's something I'm really going to be looking for out of him as we go forward in this spring and summer AAU season.
All right. Well, that is a full report on recruiting for the next three classes. We'll now get to the main event of this podcast, which is, of course, our interview with Travis Steele.
All right. Well, joining us now in the podcast, it's my pleasure to welcome in assistant coach Travis Steele. Coach, thanks for joining us on the Dana Victory podcast.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, coach, let's start right here. Big news coming out just recently that you guys are moving to the Big East Conference. First of all, take us through what was kind of the reaction among the coaching staff, and two, how has it changed recruiting for you so far this spring?
You know, I think obviously very excited about the new opportunity and the new challenges that the Big East presents. You know, it's as good as a conference as any conference in the entire country. You know, we're very thankful for all the past players that played at Xavier and previous coaches that have made this, you know, this dream a reality, I guess, for us. You know, we've taken Xavier's come a long way over the last 20 years of, you know, continuing to take steps in the right direction of becoming a, you know, a top 15 program in the entire country. And I think as far as recruiting goes, Rick, like, I think it's going to help us. You know, it just, you know, kids won't be attracted to playing in the Big East. You know, you're playing in Madison Square Garden, which is the mecca of college, of basketball in general in the entire world, for our conference tournament. We have the likes of Georgetown, Providence, Villanova, all coming to the CentOS Center. So I think it's going to be a big attraction.
Coach, if you can expand on the recruiting thing a little bit more, I've sort of likened it to the fact that, look, you guys recruited really well in the A-10 because of your success in the tournament and because of the status of Xavier's basketball program. But there's still – it's one of those things where recruits, when they're kind of looking at schools, they almost have a checklist. And their parents may as well, where they're kind of looking for certain things. It's like, okay, yes, Xavier has tournament success. Yes, they're on TV all the time. But they're playing in the Atlantic 10 in the past. Now it's sort of just one thing that they can't use against you when looking at your school. Is that somewhat correct, or do you agree with that at all?
No, I definitely do. I think it that stigma of, hey, you guys play in the Atlantic 10, is no longer there, obviously. You know, it's like we used to always tell recruits, we're not recruiting you to play in the Atlantic 10. We're recruiting you to make it to a Final Four. And, you know, and that's still obviously our goal. Now we're even going to be on a bigger stage in the Big East, which obviously is very attractive to recruits and their families. But at the end of the day, it comes down to fit. You know, it's got to be a right fit for us. It's got to be a right fit for the kid. But I do think it's going to help us kind of expand our recruiting even a little bit more.
Coach, turning to next year's team, there's going to be a lot of roster turnover. You've got Matt Stainbrook, Miles Davis, Jalen Reynolds all are going to be eligible and able to play for you this year. Can you talk real briefly about the roles you anticipate those guys playing next season?
I'll start off with Matt. You know, Matt, you know, came to Xavier, obviously, his first college game ever was in the CentOS Center when he played at Western Michigan, and he played very well against us. And, you know, we knew right then and there, like, man, hey, this kid's really skilled. When he transferred, you know, I had that memory, or so did Coach Mack, of Matt Stainbrook's pretty dang good. And, you know, when we took him, I think a lot of people questioned it a little bit. But Matt is a guy that works diligently. His work ethic's as good as anybody I've ever been around. You know, he's lost dang near 60 pounds. Coach Matt Jennings, our strength coach, has done a great job with him. And Matt's put all the work in. You know, I think Matt's going to give us a guy on the offensive end, a guy that we can play through. He has a brilliant basketball IQ, the highest basketball IQ I've honestly ever been around as far as a player. He sees things on the court. You know, I think we can throw him the ball in the low post and give him the ball to a score or make a play for others. He's going to command a lot of attention down there. I also think that we're going to be able to use him in the high post on offense because he can really, really pass, and he can shoot the ball 15 to 17 foot, even though he thinks sometimes he can shoot some threes. But he's going to bring a lot of skill to us on the offensive end and the guy that can really play. Jalen Reynolds, you know, Jalen is a highly athletic kid, very long, tough, nasty around the rim. He's got a chance to be really, really good. And he's gotten a lot stronger. I know that. You can look at his body, and it looks like he's a senior. You know, his body does. Again, Coach Mike Jennings deserves a lot of credit on that. He's worked really hard with him and given him kind of just a plan, even though he wasn't really able to lift with him, just kind of gave him a plan to do. So, you know, I anticipate him having a big role rebounding, finishing, you know, blocking shots, you know, being a great finisher because we're going to have very good guard play. Then you go to Miles Davis, and I say Miles, obviously, you know, his reputation is a big-time shooter. And I think Miles is even more than that, though. I think he's more of a scorer. You know, I think Miles can really knows how to play. can shoot, handle, and pass. You know, I always say, people always say, hey, this kid's a really skilled kid. But a lot of kids can only just shoot the ball, or they can only handle, or they can only pass. He can do all three. And I think that makes him a little bit unique on our team, because we really need that skill set on the perimeter. We need a guy who can really score the ball, and Miles is going to bring that.
Coach, Matt Stainbrook had a little bit of a setback here before the spring with a knee injury. I know he had to have surgery. Where is he at in terms of his recovery, and how well has he been able to stay, you know, keep the weight off and stay conditioned?
See, I'm not really allowed to maybe comment on his injury per se, but know that he's doing very, very well. He'll be back any day. You know, Matt, I would say, has done a great job. Honestly, he's lost weight. Even during this process. So he's doing great.
Travis, talking about the guys that you've got coming back next year, I mean, Samaje, obviously, I don't think there's a whole lot needs to be said about his game, but who are the other returnees do you see as particularly critical to your success next year? I mean, I think the easy answer for fans is to say, well, Justin Martin, because he's the incumbent at the three, but who are some guys that you're looking for to make a significant step forward this season?
You know, I really hope, we'll start kind of with the guards. I really hope D. Davis makes a big jump. You know, D had a pretty good year as a sophomore, especially a guy that didn't play a whole lot as a freshman, played spot minutes. You know, I thought he did a nice job for us. I thought overall he was probably our best defender last year. He did a great job for us. But the areas where he's really got to improve in is decision-making. You know, his assist-to-turnover ratio can't be hovering around the 1-to-1. You know, that's not good enough in order for us to win the Big East. You know, his assist-to-turnover ratio has to be 2-to-1. It means for every one turnover he has, you have to have 2 assists. And he's really got to be able to run our team, be more vocal, and make sure that our offense and our defense system is being executed at the highest level. Looking for him to take that jump in leadership, looking for him to take that jump in decision-making. Justin Martin, going to be critical. You know, I think it all comes down to his effort level and his focus. You know, I think Justin has to be able to handle a little adversity, whether it's getting an early foul, getting 2 early fouls in a game where he gets to sit the rest of the half, or, you know, something bad happened in the game. He missed a couple shots early. He's got to be able to get past adversity. He's got to be mentally tougher. And I'll say he's had a very good offseason. Looking forward to him even becoming mentally tougher during the summer. That's going to be a big step for him. Then you kind of go on to trying to think, you know, Eric Stanger. Obviously, you know, I think Eric can bring even more than what he brought, as far as a guy that can finish better around the rim, guy that can make more free throws. And I think he will. You know, Eric is a diligent worker. He's going to put time in the gym in the off season, and he's going to get better at those two areas. But as you know, we love to have Eric. Eric does a great job out there on the floor. And James Farr. James has continued to learn our system. You know, sometimes it's really difficult for a freshman coming in, and all of a sudden you got an offensive and defensive system and you're held accountable to it. A lot of times in high school, you're not held accountable to the system, executing little things. And it can be difficult for some guys more than others, depending upon the coaching that they've had and depending upon their basketball IQ. And James was one of those guys that struggled, had a little bit of a learning curve coming into last year with our system. And I think hopefully now that he knows our system for one full year, hopefully he can take that next step in executing it and executing at game speed without thinking. And that's going to be the key for James Fox. I think James can shoot the ball. He rebounds the ball. He's obviously huge. He's a big human being, and he can block some shots. And I think he can have an impact on our team.
Hey, Travis, real quick, guys that you have already signed, I believe you're allowed to comment on, Brandon Randolph, Kamal Richards. What type of high school seasons do those guys have? And I know you haven't had any chance to work with them or anything like that, but what do you expect them to bring to the team?
You know, I would expect start with Kamal. Kamal, you know, I would say had a good high school season. You know, he talked to all those guys up in the New England Prep School League, which our whole staff has very good relationships with. And they said, hey, Kamal's going to be able to help you guys out a lot. You know, Kamal is a three-man. He's about 6'5", 6'6", very long. I would say longer than he is athletic. High motor, tough kid, plays hard, can shoot the ball. You know, I think he finds ways to score. He rebounds the ball. I think fans and our staff are going to really love having him around. He's a great kid.
We expect big things out of him as a freshman. Brandon Randolph, obviously from Inglewood, California, had a very good high school season. Got banged up a little bit at the very end of the season, but nothing serious at all. But he had a great season. He's very explosive, very athletic. He's going to give us another guy who can play the one or the two, and, you know, he can score the ball and get by guys. I always say, like, when you evaluate players, can he get by his position? And Brandon can definitely do that. He's explosive. He's strong. You know, the biggest adjustment for him, I think, is going to be, again, like that day in, day out being pushed. You know, it's a little bit different than high school. The advantage Kamal's going to have is he was at a prep school fifth year, which will help. You know, he's going to be a little bit more mature, probably had a little bit extra coaching than what Brandon's had. But Brandon, I think, could really come in and help us because we needed another ball handler. There was times last year when we get hurt, we have a couple guys go down. Like, for example, against UC or VCU, it really hurt us when D and Samaje or D specifically got hurt. And we didn't have anybody else who could handle the ball. I really think Brandon's going to be able to help us in that area.
Coach, talking about the guys that you've signed for next year really brings us into a discussion of recruiting. And while we know you can't really comment directly on ongoing recruitments, you can talk about sort of the process. Your background, I think, is interesting because you're a guy that got into coaching very young. I mean, you could probably say it's in your blood, given that given that the coach at Illinois is a relative of yours. How do you think – can you talk a little bit about your background and how you got into coaching at such an early age and talk briefly about sort of the experiences that you bring to bear as a recruiter?
Yeah, you know, I think – you know, I loved basketball when I was young. My brother, you mentioned, I claim him sometimes. Good thing is we have last names. They're the same moms, but different dads. You know, he used to really push me. And he'd work me out all the time. I had a guy named Todd Licklider, who was our high school coach. He was then the head coach at Butler and the head coach at Iowa, and phenomenal coach. So I was lucky and very fortunate enough to have, you know, two future, you know, Big Ten coaches and Todd Licklider and John Gross to work me out, to always be around me, and to be very fortunate to have that. And that really impacted my life. You know, I love basketball. I always grew up around it. I was always playing. I was never a great player, but I always figured, like, I knew I wanted to coach. And what I decided to do after my freshman year at Butler, I decided to say, you know what, I'm gonna just coach and see where it takes me. I started coaching high school basketball in Indianapolis at Ben Davis High School, and then I started up my own business of working out players. And I was fortunate enough to have some of the best players in Indiana all work out with me. In my workout facility. And I also coached AAU basketball with Spies. Again, had great teams and great players, lucky to be around them. And then I also coached with Indiana Elite. So I've kind of seen recruiting from probably a different angle than most college coaches. You know, I've coached at the high school level. I've coached in the AAU level. And I've coached in the junior college level for a brief stint, where you got to recruit from all three of those levels. And here in the Midwest, you know, I would say that because I was one of them, you know, it's a little bit different. I got a different relationship with a lot of the high school coaches, AAU coaches, and junior college coaches in the Midwest. It's really taught me what do those guys are thinking on the other end. Because I think you always got to put yourself in their shoes. Because I think so many times college coaches, like, kids will hear the same spiel every night from a different coach. And it just kind of becomes the same. It all gets mushed together. And I think you have to be different than the next coach that calls. That's a big thing. You got to develop that relationship and that trust. And that's really critical in recruiting.
Coach, can you talk a little bit about just the process overall of recruiting? When you're going out on the road, and you know, the last 2 weekends you guys were allowed to get out there, with your background and with your sort of unique look on recruiting, what types of things are you out there looking for in a player? In other words, what traits or what specific things that may be a little bit different from the way maybe us media guys rank players or look at players that you're really evaluating when you go out to these AAU tournaments?
Sure. I'd say the first thing you always got to find out, man, is, other than just the basketball characteristics we'll talk about in a second, I think number one's character. I always say high character kids develop, you know, like, because they're not as distracted by all the stuff going on around them. They're more focused, you know. So character is the first thing. You know, second thing is, are they academically capable? And you know, we find that out by getting a transcript and seeing what their SAT, ACT scores are and whatnot. You know, but as far as the basketball stuff goes, I'd say first and foremost, the question you got to ask, and it's probably the hardest thing to find out about a kid, because every high school coach thinks their kid's a gym rat. Everybody. But it's all relative. You know, it's all relative, though. You know, just because Johnny gets up 100 shots, you know, twice a week, that doesn't mean he's a gym rat. You know, like, the guys that love it, the guys that live it, breathe it, those are the guys that do well in college. And that's hard to figure out, telling in recruiting, but it's the most important thing to find out. You know, so, but when I watch a kid just in general, I'm watching, number one, I want to know what his motor is. You know, does he play hard? Does he have a motor? You know, does he have energy level to him? Because I always say either a kid's either enhancing the energy of your team or he's hurting it. It's one of the two. It's near never just even. You know, does he talk? Does he have intangibles? Is he a leader? Is he coachable? Is he a good teammate? You know, we look for all those things. And then the obvious things are, okay, can he shoot, handle, and pass? What skilled guys that know how to play. I think so many times, I think as us coaches, we get caught up in size and athleticism. Those things help, but you got to be able to, you got to have an IQ. If you don't know how to play, it's going to be hard. It's just going to be, especially at this level where the accountability offensively and defensively is a lot different than high school or AAU. Do they know how to play? Can they see things on the court offensively and defensively? Do they make winning plays? You know, we want guys that win. There's a reason why certain guys win. And an average person may say, all right, man, he's not as good as him. He's not quite as talented. He may not be quite as talented, but he may be tougher. He may make more winning plays. He may be a better teammate, maybe more coachable. There's a lot of different things that we look for when we say, hey, that's a Xavier player. At the end of the day, though, those are all the things, you know, kind of look for all of them, you know, if you possibly can.
Coach, again, going back to the process, I think one of the things that is tough to get from the, because I'm not in the business. I mean, I'm just a fan, a total outsider.
But a damn good podcast co-host.
I do my best. One of the things, how do you and Coach Mack and Coach Howard and Coach Pegues assemble your list of who you're going to go out and target? I mean, I assume you guys have a big board somewhere in the bowels of Cintas Center, but mm-hmm. how do you focus in on who your top prospects are going to be? How do you identify the guys that you feel like fit that mold of Xavier player that you just talked about, and decide how to, you know, allocate the resources that you have to try and get those guys in the fold?
You know, I think first off is getting the information. Like, okay, I hear Johnny from wherever is really good. All right. Well, then I'm going to call his coach, high school coach or AAU coach. I call them both. Find out what they think of him and find out what his grades are like. Find out what his character is like. Then I'll go watch him. You know, we're allowed to go out during the season. There's 100, you know, during the school year, I guess, there's 130 countable days to where our whole staff, all four of us, can go out and recruit. And so we get 130 days amongst all four of us. You know, we try to go out and evaluate all different classes, seniors, juniors, sophomores, freshmen. You know, we're always trying to identify young guys and get them onto campus as soon as possible. But I think through word of mouth, I think through the internet, through Twitter, there's going to be less and less diamonds in the rough. There just are. Now, there's still going to be a few out there, and that's our job to find them. And but, like, through word of mouth and our relationships, you know, Coach Pegues is from Washington, D.C. He's going to know about kids from that area. Coach Howard is from Philadelphia. He's going to know about kids from that area and Jersey and all and other people that they know in the business. And same thing with me being from Indiana and being a recruit here in the Midwest. I'll hear about kids, and that's kind of how we get out. We see those kids. We identify them. If we like them, we'll get them to campus, try to get them to campus as early as possible for an unofficial visit, just so they can see us, start developing that relationship. Again, that's what it always comes down to, is like, do they trust you? Do you trust them? You know, and I think it goes both ways, and we got to really figure that out. But now that's kind of in a gist how we find out about them, more through word of mouth and through our relationships in the business.
Trev, real quick, just sort of wrapping up this recruiting conversation. It's been completely enlightening, I'm sure, for me and many of our listeners as well. But when you're talking about, you know, that relationship, is that the most important thing to build with these recruits? Because when we interview these kids, you know, they're always talking about, well, I most important thing to me is style of play, or most important thing to me is I want to go to a big school, or I want to go to a big conference, or I want to like the coaching staff. Is it something different for every kid, or what is the most important thing, in your opinion, to sell a kid on?
You know, I think always the first question I ask a recruit, the two first questions are, what are you looking for in a school? And then who's helping you make the decision? You got to know those two things. And you got to know, like, who around the kid is an information guy, who's the guy that you need to really push. And we try to basically surround the recruit as best as we possibly can with phone calls, text messages, emails, as long as we can, you know, as long as he's old enough in the process. And I think, like, when you ask a kid what is he looking for in school, it's different for every kid. Some families, you know, and the families that we want, the kids that we have success with, Xavier, value education very highly. And that's big for us. That means we could probably have a really good shot at them. You know, but, like, some kids, they're more interested in style of play. Some kids are more interested in, you know, development. Some kids are more interested, in facilities. But I think at the end of the day, that kid and their family has to trust you, because when they send their son away to college, to wherever it is and wherever they're from, they got to say to themselves, like, we trust them with our son. That's a big responsibility. You're almost like a parent to them for the next 4 years. You're basically the parents of their kid, and they really got to be able to trust them. I think the kid, the recruit, has to really be able to trust the coaches that you're not selling them just a bag of goods, and you're telling them the truth. Because all of a sudden, if you start lying to them on the recruiting end, and then they get to your campus, things change. All of a sudden, they don't trust you. And all of a sudden, it's going to be a little bit harder to coach them. And that trust starts in the recruiting process. The honesty and being very upfront in the recruiting process of exactly how it's going to be here at Xavier, I think, is really big in developing the trust within the crew and his family.
Coach, one question that I think Rick and I were both talking about before we had you on here, and could you walk us through just a recruitment of a guy that's maybe on the team now or is left that you were involved in? I know you were the primary guy on Samaje Kristen and Dee Davis, and just maybe tell us a little bit about how you got to know the kid and how the how you became aware of them and what steps you took to get them on campus.
You know, you that with Dee, you know, I was at Indiana University before I came to Xavier, and obviously Dee's from Bloomington right there, that's where Indiana University is located at. You know, so I've known Dee forever, and since he was a little guy, and you know, known his dad, a player that I used to work out and I recruited in Indiana, Armand Bassett, was really close with Dee Davis. And, you know, he used to work out with him all the time. And Armand told me, hey, Coach, you need to be on him hard. Got him over to campus. We liked what we saw. Committed. You know, again, like that trust had been there for a long time between me and his family. And you kind of go to Samaje Kristen. You know, Samaje was a guy, a late bloomer, so to speak. You know, Samaje lived 20 minutes from Xavier's campus. You know, he had a great senior year at Winton Woods. You know, I went up and watched him practice, loved him. And Coach Max saw him play a few times, loved him. You know, just kind of, that was the position that we really needed. We knew it was a great fit for us. And I think if you interviewed Samaje, he would tell you that the big things, you know, attractions to Xavier were, number one, education. Mom, you know, his mother was a great lady, loved education here at Xavier, loved it. And being close to his family, Samaje is a very, very family-oriented guy. You know, he loved being around his brothers and sisters and mom. you know, that was a big thing. And then just the style of play and development. And I think he knew that, you know, to get to where he wants to go one day, he knew he could reach those dreams here at Xavier and wanted to do it in his city and represent the city of Cincinnati to the best he can.
Assistant coach Travis Steele. Travis, you've been more than generous with your time, but, you know, we got to be honest. When we can get a big-time guest like you and not talk to Brian Snow on this podcast, it's always a good night. We got to milk it for all it's worth. We appreciate you joining us.
Thank God Brian Snow wasn't on this podcast.
Travis Steele, thanks for joining us, Coach.
Thank you.
Great stuff there from Travis Steele. I hope you guys enjoyed that, Dan. I felt like, you know, he gave us sort of a look at some things that we've never really talked about on here, or information it just hasn't been discussed, at least at the Xavier level, I don't think, before.
Well, I mean, yeah, absolutely. And I think coming from one of the things that I thought Travis said that was really astute was when he talked about how he sort of has that special connection with the guys who are out on the recruiting trail because he's done all their jobs. It reminded me a little bit when he was talking about Chris Mack's initial press conference when he got the Xavier job, when he talked about all the different roles that he'd had vis-a-vis the Xavier program as a camper, as a fan, as a opponent, as a player, and then as an assistant coach. It's kind of cool to get to sort of see the curtain pulled back a little bit, and hopefully we'll be able to get some similar guests with that kind of access on the show as we move forward in the off season. I know Rick has been doing some legwork on that, so hopefully it'll bear fruit.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Dan, bearing fruit just doesn't sound like anything I want to do right now. I'm sorry, but Dan, it's the off season. It's been a while since we've talked. You have had a child. I mean, how are things going on with your life? You've got NBA playoffs, the Reds, and a child in your house all at the same time. I imagine craziness at the Smith household.
It has been it's one of those things where it's actually made it more – it's facilitated my sports viewing because I'm sort of tied to the couch all day. But, yeah, it's been wonderful. We're really happy. And that's why, by the way, that we haven't had a podcast in the last month, for those of you who are wondering. But yes, moving on to the NBA playoffs, Rick, I guess the real question from the games that I've seen so far, and granted they were playing Milwaukee, but can anyone beat the Miami Heat this year?
No. No, they can't. I mean, if they couldn't beat them last year, how could they beat them this year? Honestly, I thought there were better teams last year. And they weren't able to do it. And the Heat wasn't quite as good as they are this year. I mean, LeBron's just at a completely different level. And Dwayne Wade's shown recently that he's still capable of some of those vintage performances where he'll even carry the team offensively, which I honestly didn't think he still had in him. So this Heat team's really, really good.
I guess the one thing that could be a little bit interesting is if Chicago is able to finish off their series against Brooklyn, and if Derrick Rose is able to come back with Heinrich, could that be a situation where they have enough firepower to at least extend a series against Miami?
Maybe extend the series. I mean, if you want to play six games or something, but I don't think that's like a seven-game series at all. And I just, at the end of the day, they're really good defensively, but you can only be really good defensively if you can stop guys one-on-one, and there's no one on their team who can stop LeBron. I don't care what they say. LeBron will take over in that series, and Chicago just doesn't have enough scoring, even with Rose in the lineup, especially if he's not quite himself after sitting out the whole season.
Well, you know, there's a great story, and Bill Simmons tells it all the time. It's one of my favorite Bill Simmons stories. He talks about Moses Malone back in the early 80s, where they asked him, and it was when Moses was a younger guy, wasn't real articulate, and they asked him how the playoffs were going to go for one of the Sixers teams with the doctor, and he said, "Faux, faux, faux." And I think Miami may do faux, 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 faux this year. I mean, I just don't see anybody that can really hang with them, especially given the fact that maybe the team that was sort of the hope for those of us that have some vested interest in seeing the Heat knocked off, the Oklahoma City Thunder, lost maybe their second best player to a really a catastrophic injury this late in the playoffs. And it is just – it's tough to see anybody really giving them a good run, you know? I mean, there are good. There are going to be some good series. I think this Grizzlies-Clippers series, which is about to tip off – is it game five tonight? I think it is. I think that's going to be a real good series. That the Knicks-Boston series obviously was – there were a couple real good games in that one. But, I mean, it's just really a freight train rolling toward the NBA Finals at this point. It's hard to see anybody – really putting up any resistance.
Yeah, honestly, I'll tell you who I think could actually give them the best series in the finals. San Antonio Spurs. Spurs are much more athletic than they've been in the past, and they've still got just, I mean, like Tim Duncan has to be the most frustrating human to play against in basketball at any level. He is so good, and there's nothing you can do to take away what he does well. You cannot stop anything that he does.
You know, I was really pleased that when my daughter was born, I was scrolling through the list on Wikipedia of who she shared a birth date with, and Tim Duncan was one of them. So I was very heartened by that.
I was hoping you were going to say Patty Mills or something. That'd be typical of you.
No, not in this particular case. But yeah, and yeah, the Spurs are, and of course the Spurs have that. They have sort of the old man's strength.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that the right – you know, they seem to know when they have to turn it on a little bit. Now, they demolished a Lakers team, which has got to be – outside of the New York Jets, there is no franchise that is more dysfunctional at this point in time than the Los Angeles Lakers. But, and let's talk about that for a second. Who is going to sign Dwight Howard after that fiasco?
Unfortunately, a lot of teams. I mean – just because he is so good. And to be fair, as immature as he's being about all of this, I put a lot of this on Kobe Bryant. Everyone wants to give him credit because he's so good, but Kobe Bryant is a terrible leader. He is not Jordan at all. He is a complete attention whore. That walking out to the bench with your crutches when your team's down 25 and Dwight just got booted, basically saying, yeah, I want to be as far away from that dude as I can and show that I didn't agree with him being on the team the whole time, basically, and coming out to the bench and putting all the spotlight back on himself when he's doing nothing to help the team at the moment. It's like, dude, just get out of here. Quit tweeting during the game, second-guessing your coach. Quit showing up on the bench on your crutches, cheering on the team like you care and coaching them when they're down by 30. We don't care. Just go away while you're injured.
You know, I have some sympathy for that because Kobe is really annoying. But by the same token, I mean, he does have the credibility. You know, he's been through the wars. He's won the championships.
He's never won anything without a giant center to save him. And if he would have been smart enough to use freaking Dwight Howard this year, they would have had a chance again. But he couldn't get along with him.
Fair enough. But, I mean, this is not – Dwight Howard is not a first-time offender here.
No, he's
I mean, his behavior in Orlando was pretty deplorable as far as big-time professional athletes go. So the question that you have, I guess, and I heard it raised on PTI or something like that, is that he really needs to probably go to a small – back to a to sort of a small market team where there's not quite as much spotlight in his eyes, where he can sort of just, you know, be everyone's favorite guy and not have to face the spotlight. But yeah, the Lakers, complete mess. And it was just the screaming match between him and Mitch Kupchak in the tunnel after he got thrown out of the game. And by the way, he got thrown out of the game because he quit.
Yeah.
He didn't want to play anymore.
Yeah. Oh,
and
no,
it was just embarrassing.
That was embarrassing. I agree with that. But people do forget, like, they're acting like this is a Tebow situation or something where no one's going to want him. It's like, hold on, he did play really well. He was still one of the best centers in the league this year. Like, teams are still going to take him.
All right, let's talk about one more topic in the NBA, and then I'm going to ask you about the Bengals draft. And the topic is Jason Collins and the really extraordinary story in Sports Illustrated that came out this week, Collins becoming the first male, I guess, and you have to say that because you think about Martina Navratilova and some of the other female athletes over the years, but the first athlete in a Big Four men's sport in the United States active to come out as a homosexual. you know, you're in the game, Rick. You see it. You cover the recruiting scene. You cover the high school scene. Do you think this is a – how big of a deal do you think this is? Because I think for older people, it's just like, well, who cares? But do you think this is a big deal for young people, for the young people coming up through high school and college that might be in that same situation?
I think it is. I think it's good for everyone. And look, I don't think it's the biggest deal ever. I'd rather it be where we didn't care about someone's sexual orientation and this wasn't a big deal. But people that it's naive to say that it isn't. I mean, let's just face the fact. It's very naive. And people that are saying, well, why do we even have to know? We don't ask every other player if they're straight. We just know. Well, no, you just assume that they're straight. You know, it's not that you don't know. It's just that you assume that they're straight. Because the first time that they go out to the movies with their significant other and do what any normal person would do, and, you know, I'm not saying that they're doing a bunch of PDA, but they're walking, holding hands or something, that's going to be on TMZ so quick.
Right.
And it's going to be such a news story, and it's going to be a problem for their organization and now a whole circus that I could understand why no one wanted to come out in the past, and I could understand why it's a big deal. Now, my thing with Jason Collins is I think it's great because he is, I mean, the pro's pro. He's a tough guy. He's almost a goon. I mean, in basketball terms, he's the enforcer that they brought off the bench to pick up flagrant fouls and use all six of them and play as a tough guy. So in that sense, it's kind of cool that he's the one that's coming out. But the problem is everyone's like, oh, it's an active player. Well, yeah, maybe or maybe not, considering it's kind of the end of his career and he's a free agent right now. So, you know, I think it'll be really interesting to see when we have a gay player for sure in a locker room. The only thing I'm really worried about at this point, I don't think it's going to be a problem with the players or his teammates or anything like that. There's going to be a few guys who have their beliefs that, you know, and won't like him. But there's guys in the NBA right now who don't like black guys, or black guys who don't like white guys, or guys who don't like Mexicans. I mean, there's that wherever you go in life. I don't think him being gay or any player being gay is going to be an issue in the locker room. I'm interested to see how much of a sideshow it becomes. Is it almost like the Tebow thing? Have they taken up – does that guy become a face for the cause? And is it such a circus everywhere they go that it becomes an issue in the locker room and with the team that they're on? That's the only thing I'm really interested to see at this point, and I don't know if we'll find that out with Jason Collins.
Yeah, that's probably true, and I would definitely agree with that. I think it for there really to be a sea change, we're going to need to see a critical mass of kids in college or of professional players who are willing to just step out and just say, look, you know, this is who I am. This is what I am. And for their teammates and for their competitors to accept that. But, you know, I just thought today as I saw some of those articles that showed all the supportive tweets from guys like Kevin Durant, Kobe Bryant, and whoever else. And, you know, maybe some of that is PR massaging.
The same Kobe Bryant who was just fined heavily for using homophobic slur last year. Fair enough.
But there were a lot of guys of NBA players with credibility, let's say, left that posted things, and that, you know, it's heartening to see that level of acceptance. But the proof's in the pudding, I guess, and we'll see how this goes.
At the same time, these guys are trained well enough and they're becoming savvy enough that it's PR for them. They know they need to get on Twitter and say something, because to be honest with you, right now there's no bigger stigma in our society than being labeled as a homophobe. If you make a homophobic reference or a slur, that is the one thing that you cannot overcome in our society right now. It kills you in the public
eye. But I will say this. You know, I remember as a kid, and I'm in my mid-30s now, but I do remember when Magic Johnson made his initial announcement that he had HIV, and I remember there being quite a backlash against him. I mean, there were players like, I think Karl Malone is the most infamous one, but there were a lot of players that said, no, I'm not playing with him. You know, I'm not getting on the floor with him. And it's amazing to me that in, 20 years that we've come to this point, and, you know, from my perspective, and I can only speak for myself, I don't expect everyone to agree with my political or social views, but I think it's a good thing, and I hope it continues.
Yeah, I feel the exact same way. I think this is positive, and it's cool to see that we're at this point where someone would feel comfortable doing it, but it's only a first step. I mean, I hope this just we become more and more progressive thinking on issues like this to where it really isn't an issue at all.
Final thoughts, Bengals draft, Rick. I found it interesting that all the highlights of the kid from Notre Dame appeared to be in slow motion, but maybe they were in regular motion. I don't know. But anyway, it seems like this year, maybe not. You know, the Bengals really have owned the draft the last 3 years, it seemed like. Everybody really lauding what they'd done. What was your take this year? The guys they got.
It's interesting because Friday night I was down at Dickman's doing some radio with 100.3 The Fan talking about the draft. And it became increasingly clear like that they were going to take Eifert before that pick came up in the first round. And the one thing I said at the time that I loved about it, despite, you know, I don't know enough to grade all these football players, and I didn't see enough college football to know all these college football players. Like, I know Eifert well, but I don't know everyone else that was around that could have been taken at that point. So I don't know if he was the best value, but I love the fact that their pick was in, like, the second their name came up. And I love the fact that they went with a guy who was not really – I mean, tight end was kind of deep on the needs list, in my opinion. But what was huge on the needs list was more weapons for Andy Dalton and help for him. And clearly, my read would be that they felt that Eifert – was the best option by far at that position in the draft to help Dalton out. And maybe, you know, with Dalton not having the strongest arm in the world, maybe a guy who's a really good pass catcher, intermediate, over-the-middle routes, is the perfect thing for Dalton. So I really liked the Eifert pick because even though it probably isn't what I would have done or expected from them, I thought, you know, they must have felt that they got the best value at that spot.
Well, and I thought the biggest pick of the draft for the Bengals was getting Giovanni Bernard at the top of the second round.
Were you surprised at all that Eddie Lacy was in a consideration there? Or I mean, for the Bengals, I felt like Bernard was the right choice because he's more what they needed. But were you surprised that Lacy fell the way he did?
Yeah. Yes and no, I guess, because I think there's always going to be a little bit of a suspicion about skill players from Alabama because of how dominant their lines are.
That's fair.
And, you know, not to say that Lacy won't be a fantastic back, but I think back to that Arkansas team with McFadden and Felix Jones and, they had the big white running back for Cleveland. What was his name? Peyton Hillis. And they were just dominant. They were just – all three of them were dominant. But, you know, McFadden never really did much in the pros. Jones was really just a gadget back, and Hillis had that one great year for Cleveland but didn't do much. And I think there is maybe a feeling that the SEC breeds these unbelievable front seven defensive players and great offensive linemen, but it's a little bit questionable whether or not their skill players can be that great because of the inherent advantages they have given the players they have in front. Now, Lacy dominated the national championship game. He stomped all over Manti Te'o and everybody else in that Notre Dame defense. But from the Bengals' perspective, does it make a little bit more sense to bring in a guy that's a little bit shiftier, that gives you something that Ben Jarvis Green Ellis does not give you? I mean, I look at this guy as sort of what Bernard Scott was supposed to be.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping too.
Or what Chris Perry was supposed to be. So I thought – so it didn't – actually, you know who this is. This is the substitution for the Kenny Irons pick.
I was just going to bring up Kenny Irons. What is he doing right now?
Well, I don't know.
I have his autograph somewhere. That's like the only autograph I think I've ever gotten.
Well, he's probably he's shorter than both of us, so that
oh,
that
no
was
doubt.
His first problem.
And he
problem.
Had great teeth. Oh, God, did he have some great front teeth.
But, yeah, but one of the more interesting picks I thought was Margus Hunt in the third round, the 6'9" defensive end from SMU or wherever he's from.
Yeah.
It reminded me a lot of the Michael Johnson pick a couple years ago, which did bear fruit.
I'm hoping it might be like Jason Pierre-Paul. That's who he kind of reminds me of with that body and his explosiveness.
Well, and I always like seeing guys brought in because I think that in the NFL, the talent level is usually so close and compacted that wherever you can find a little bit of an edge, you need to take it. And so a guy like Margus Hunt, who's a freak of nature, who's the all-time NCAA record holder in kicks blocked, might be a guy that could win you a game, you know?
Oh, I love guys with weird skills like that. Like Dede Dorsey, like one of the biggest reasons I liked him was because he blocked kicks. He had like a weird knack for blocking kicks.
Right. And they got, and you know, the Bengals won that game in Philadelphia to a large extent because they got that great special teams play from Boom Heron early in the game.
Right.
Exactly. That really turned the tide in that game. But in any event, we're talking about football, we're talking about the NBA, we're talking about homosexuals and culture, so it must be the off season. Once again, thanks to everybody for being patient with us. I know it's been a month. Obviously, I've had some developments that have kept me from being able to report. Rick's been on the road. He'll continue to be on the road. We're really grateful to Travis Steele for coming on the podcast today.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks to Coach Steele and Dan. Well done. That does it for the Travis Steele edition, number 29 of the Dana Victory podcast, only on MusketeerReport.com. For Dan, I'm Rick. Thanks for listening, everyone.